Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, a special conversation with Chasten Buttigieg. Chasten, of course, the husband of Pete Buttigieg, kind of took a back seat a little bit during the presidential campaign, as one would as the candidate's spouse, but also became a huge hit on social media with his pithy, fun, dramatic, different kind of takes on things. Of course, one of the most important gay couples in the history of American politics. So he put out a new book called I Have Something to Tell You, which is in reference to him coming out. And it's really an exceptional book. So we sat down with him. Here is our unedited conversation, which includes extra content you didn't get to see on TV. And I think it's an important conversation, an important book, and I hope you enjoy it. Here it is. Chasten Buttigieg, welcome back to The Issue Is, and congratulations on the book's success.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me back.
Sure. So I got the book and I read it, and I got to give you an endorsement because I'm a political junkie. I read all sorts of political books. Most of them are really boring because they're cautious and they're too much about policy. This one is personal. You spill some tea, you get vulnerable.
Just a little. It's
a really interesting read, and I think it's an important read for a lot of people because one of the main premises for your book is that you want people to feel heard, right?
Absolutely. I think, you know, the thing I want to tell people most of all is they're not alone. And the reason I, you know, open up so much in the book is because so often people in politics don't share those kinds of truths or vulnerabilities. They don't take chances, and that's not the kind of book I wanted to write. I wanted to take some risks and just share who I really am. So I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah. Well, and part of it was you talking about, you know, the process for you of discovering your own sexual identity, of coming out to your family. And you tell this emotional story of writing a letter to your parents because it was tough for you to actually say it out loud and their emotional response to that letter.
Yeah, I think many times the story we're so used to hearing is the parents kick the kid out, the kid runs away. But I grew up in conservative Northern Michigan, and my parents didn't kick me out. It was just a simple fact. I felt like I knew once I come out, I'm going to shatter my parents' dreams, their hopes, and everything that I had learned from the society, the bubble I was growing up in, was something about me is twisted and broken, and people will not love that. So I wasn't pushed out of my home. I ran away because I was ashamed of this thing inside me that I had only grown up learning was wrong.
And your parents thought this is a choice.
For a while, I think they did because, you know, they were living in the same bubble I was growing up in. And I have a silver lining at the end of my story. My parents called me home and we had some really hard conversations. And I'm grateful that they called me back. But, you know, we were all living in a time here in Northern Michigan where it was just a fact you couldn't be gay. But thank God that they had those conversations and they called me home, and now they're our staunchest allies. Sometimes I fear they might love Peter a little bit more than me, but it feels good to have them on my side.
Well, and let's talk a little bit about the process of meeting him, because you talk about the struggle to date, and some guys were great, some guys were not. You talked about, you know, most men were not so great, and you went on Hinge, and you saw this profile for this guy that you thought might be the mayor, because he was speaking in front of a podium with his name on it, and you're like, I don't know that much about politics, I don't like politics that much, but yet you are still attracted to this guy.
Yeah, well, he had a really cute photo of him in his Navy uniform, so that caught my eye. But he did also have a photo of him with his name on a placard. He's standing at a podium, so I Googled him and found out quickly who he was. And I was a little cautious to go on a date with a politician, but it worked out. There were fireworks literally on the first date.
Yeah, and he set up a situation where there actually were fireworks. He went to a place.
It was like a Hallmark movie.
Where there would be fireworks in the process. So you guys end up moving in together. You get married to the mayor. He's the mayor of South Bend, Indiana. You're a bit of a local celebrity, but most people didn't know you. Then he runs for president and just takes off like wildfire. And you write about the fact that there was a book signing event for him in Washington, and for the first time, people are asking to take pictures with you.
Yeah, it was surreal. I had never been in a position where people just wanted to take a photo with me or just wanted to talk to me simply because of who I was. And then obviously, like you said, from there, just the rocket took off. And it was a lot of trial by fire. It was like drinking from a fire hose.
So you become a bit of an icon for the LGBTQ community, which was something you weren't necessarily even prepared for, or didn't know. And all these people are telling you their personal stories and see you as such an important vehicle for their story. How did you emotionally deal with that, basically going from 0 to 60 out of nowhere?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, sometimes it was hard. You have to be on all day, every day, trying to show up for everyone. But the thing right out of the gate that I wanted my team to know was I'm never going to pretend to have it all figured out. And, you know, my experience is only one experience. So I want to spend a lot of time in the LGBTQ plus community, making sure I'm hearing stories from all over the country. That way, when we get to Washington, I feel like I'm carrying their stories with me. So I spent a lot of time touring centers, holding roundtables with people, listening to their stories, experiences that were vastly different from mine. I spent a lot of time in California listening to stories. I remember specifically was doing a roundtable somewhere out in the desert and was listening to students who had been pushed out of the foster care system, young Black trans women who were struggling to find housing and employment. And I just knew that it was really important to listen to an array of experiences because I never want to be seen pretending to know it all. But I did have a strong passion for listening out on the campaign trail.
And it was interesting that some in the community said, the gay community said that you were being too gay, and some people were saying you weren't being gay enough.
That was interesting. We would, you know, work some rope lines, and an older couple would pull me in and say, stop kissing him on stage, or don't put your arm around him. You know, we've got one shot to get this right, and we don't want you showing too much PDA. And on the other end, some people were saying, I think it was written in the New York Times or something like that. A journalist said we were just straight men in gay men's bodies. So it was pretty interesting to receive the fire from everyone. But it was a historical first. I know everybody wanted us to get it right, and so did we. And of course, you're going to fail if you go out there expecting that everyone's going to love you. That's just not how politics works.
And ultimately, you write about the fact that you really found yourself most comfortable when you just said, I'm just going to be myself and not try to be somebody else. So what is your message to that young kid right now that maybe is struggling with their identity, that is scared, that is growing up in a town like you grew up? What do you say to them?
Yeah, I mean, as I write in the book, I get pretty vulnerable in the book. I remember being a suicidal teenager sitting in my dad's basement, staring at the gun case and wondering if there was ever going to be a future for me in this country, if I would ever know love, if I would ever know community. And I wish I could go back and, you know, put my arm around that kid's shoulder and tell him, I know the bad feels terrible, but wait until you feel the good. Wait until you know what it is truly like to be loved by someone and know community. And I know it can feel dark and helpless, but, you know, they say it gets better. And I know sometimes that sounds like a load of baloney, but it truly does. And you are going to be loved one day.
At the beginning of this segment, we showed you Pete talking about what you mean to him. What does he mean to you?
Oh, man. I mean, when I met Pete, I just felt so broken. And I remember putting it all out on the table, you know, early on, saying, I've got all this student debt and medical debt, and I'm just starting grad school, figuring out what I want to do with my life. And, you know, sort of thinking this is never going to go past the first date, because who would want to love somebody like that? But the thing I love about Pete is he made me feel so seen and so loved and comfortable being myself. I mean, he took a wrecking ball to that wall I built up between my heart and the rest of the world. And to feel truly loved like that, to feel understood and cherished for who you are, that is the greatest gift of all. So, I mean, he means the world to me because he makes me feel that way.
You write about the fact that some view him as a bit robotic. Do you think that you've taken a wrecking ball to the wall that he may have had up?
I mean, our experiences are so different. Our youths were so different. Our experiences in college were so different. And Pete is the smartest person I've ever met. I remember being on the campaign trail, people would say, you know, I wish you knew more about pop culture. I wish you would talk about those things. And say, I think I want my president to be the smartest person in the room. I want them to know what it is like to lead. But I do think I have cracked that facade a little bit. He dances more around me. He's a goofball at home. And he's also just a romantic, the way he plays the guitar. And, you know, I wish people saw that more often, especially the loving guy he is at home, but he's also just a brilliant politician. And I sometimes fear that we kind of mix up celebrity with politician and expect them to kind of be everything. The thing that Pete is at the end of the day is a brilliant politician. He might not be up to date on his pop culture references as much as I am, but you definitely want him in the room talking about foreign policy and not me.
Well, it's amazing that you've been able to get him to dance, because we tried that on this show and he never would do that for us. But coming up next, we're going to talk a little bit about pop culture with you. We're also going to talk about what it's really like being a political spouse and play our personal issues game. What do you see as the role of a political spouse?
Well, first, it's important to set the record straight. I didn't want to come out on stage because you brought no-bake cookies in and I was demolishing those backstage. But to be a political spouse, like I mentioned even in the introduction to the book, you are expected to be everything and nothing. You have to be on your game all the time, well-read on the campaign's policies, know exactly what Pete has said and what he hasn't said, questions that he's answered and hasn't answered. But you're also expected to be nothing. Don't hog the spotlight. Don't get in the way. Don't cause any news. Don't mess up. And so it's a very confusing tightrope to walk.
And you've, by the way, a shout out to my mom who made those cookies and brownies. I always got to give credit to my mom. You've spent a lot of time personally with the two spouses that are now in the spotlight, Dr. Jill Biden and also Doug Emhoff. What are they like behind the scenes?
I love seeing both of them on the trail together right now. And you know, the first debate, Dr. Biden stood up and introduced herself right away. So did Doug. And I was really surprised at how kind they were immediately at that debate. And that just meant a lot. You know, backstage, emotions are high. You're really anxious for the person that you love. But then you also have these people who are in a small cohort of folks who understand what it's like to watch your spouse run for president. I think we got disconnected there for a second. They knew what it was like to run for president. And you could talk about that, let politics fall to the wayside, and just share some hilarity from the campaign trail.
I know you suggested in some other interviews that not everybody in the Spouses Club was as nice to you. Who are you talking about?
No, it's not a burn book. I think what was important was some people were really comfortable getting out there, talking to other people. And it wasn't for everybody. I mean, other people, they had full-time careers, they had kids, they were there to support their spouse, and they weren't really interested in anything else. And that's perfectly fine. Everyone has to figure out their own way of doing it. But Dr. Biden was always warm and gracious. I even sat next to Jane Sanders at a few debates and just said, like, can we talk about anything but politics? So we talk about kids, vacation, you know, our favorite candies. That I think everybody sort of got it that sometimes you just need a break. And I respected that out of everybody.
So Pete's now writing his own book. He's also launched a podcast, and there's talk that he may be a member of the Biden cabinet if that happens. What do you think would be the best cabinet position for him?
Oh, gosh. You know, I keep getting asked questions about what's next for him, and I I think it's okay for me to say I don't care. I want him to be happy. He's happiest when he's working on big issues, and I want him to be in Washington helping. But right now, I'm enjoying being selfish. I love having him home. We get to have three meals a day together, and I will enjoy that for whatever sliver of time we have left of that. But Pete is so alive when he is, trying to solve big problems. He was so alive on the campaign trail, and I want him to be happy just as his spouse. And I think he's happy when he's, you know, in the arena. But as long as he is engaged, I'll be happy as his husband.
And are you going to go back to teaching?
I would love to be in the classroom in some capacity. You know, I'm doing this fellowship at Harvard this fall, which is great to, you know, impart my little sliver of wisdom onto the college kids there, talking about politics from a very different angle. But I would love to participate in the classroom in some capacity in the future.
All right. You know, we like to play a game around here called Personal Issues to get to know our guests a little better. So these are rapid fire questions, 30 seconds. Okay. So let's try to go as quickly as possible. Okay, you ready?
Okay.
All right, here we go. Begin. Favorite actor?
Tom Hanks.
Favorite play or musical?
Right now I'm on a Little Shop of Horrors kick.
Favorite Disney movie?
Ooh, Up.
Who's your role model?
These are hard. Probably my mother.
Star Trek or Star Wars?
Neither.
Favorite Halloween costume?
Ooh, something gory.
Star Trek or Star Wars? Neither? That's your answer? Well, because I saw it.
I was watching Harry Potter movies. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Well, I when Pete was on Jimmy Kimmel Live, he showed a picture of himself when he was a kid dressed as Captain Picard. And I literally have the exact same picture of when I was a child.
He was really into it. There are a lot of photos of me dressed up like Harry Potter from when I was a kid. I just never got into either of those films. I'm sorry.
Okay.
But I feel like maybe that's a good thing politically, because then I won't make anyone upset on either side.
Okay? Yeah, very, very Sweden of you. That's very good. All right. Our thanks to Chasten Buttigieg. We really had a great time talking with him. We encourage you, again, to check out his book. And we encourage you to subscribe and like our podcast. We appreciate that. Connect with me in social media at Alex Michelson. Check out our other podcast we put out this week, which was a discussion about the politics of the week with Anthony Scaramucci, Seema Mehta, and also Joel Pollack. I'm Alex Michelson. See you next time on The Issue Is.